Hey SEOs and content marketers, say goodbye to crazy spreadsheet mashups and experience unprecedented connectivity between your SEO planning and reporting data. Introducing Audience Key, technology for keyword mapping, content brief automation, and rank tracking that form an SEO strategy system providing unparalleled feedback loops between planning, reporting, and optimization activities. Put your time and energy into strategy, not data upkeep. Visit audiencekey.com and apply for a free trial today.
Shopping months till Christmas. But more importantly, it means you got to get like a mess of reports together and get them together really quick because it's the end of the second quarter. So the next few days are going to be filled with Search Console and analytics and Ahrefs and SEMrush and all sorts of writing and fun and analytics and measuring and reporting and all that sort of stuff. And this is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media and Christine Schackinger from Sites Without Walls. And Christine, how are you doing at the end of the second quarter?
Hot. It's 110 here this week. So
oh, yeah, you guys are still under that oppressive heat bubble in the Southwest. It's broken up here in the Northeast. It's actually, you know, pleasantly 68 degrees or so outside.
Oh, nice. We always get 2 weeks of extreme heat in the summer. Sometimes it's June, sometimes it's July. This is our 2 weeks of extreme heat, but it looks like we have a good monsoon season coming up, which will make everything nice and awesome for the end of July and August. So crossing my fingers for that.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, it's a good day for a change of things. At any rate, the Google spam update ended earlier today. What was it? 11 a.m. or something today.
Your time, it would be 12:11.
12:11. Okay.
My time, 9:11.
So, the June 2024 spam date has stopped running. I know that there's already analysis that's out there, but that analysis was put up within the last 10 minutes. So I haven't had a chance to look at it yet, but the spam update has stopped rolling. Can we presume if you haven't been hit, you're okay?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's over. So if you haven't been hit, you're okay. If you have been hit, you might find that you can't find your site in the rankings at all anymore, or it's much lower. And interesting point that Barry Schwartz wrote in his article, Search Engine Land, about this, is that in the case of a link spam update, that's part of this update, is link spam. You lose all those links and all the value, and they will not be regained. So even if you fix your site and you're like, we fixed everything and we're not being spammy anymore, you don't have any links. So you will have to rebuild those links and do not buy them.
I'm a bit confused. So you get burned for link spam, craptastic incoming links, yes?
Yeah.
And you do a repair job on your website. So presumably Google found other problems as well. And then you recover, but you don't get the craptastic links that got you banned in the first place back again.
Or any of them.
Including ones that were useful and beneficial to you?
Yeah, any links at all. All your links are removed.
That's throwing the bathwater out with the baby.
It says that it does say it removes the spammy links you may have, but I mean,
you remove the spammy links by removing the dirty floor by removing the entire house.
Maybe it's not all. I may have misread that first part, but
I mean, that just sounds really weird, eh?
Yeah, and if you're using spammy links, you probably had a lot of spammy links, so you don't have any. You basically have very few to no links anymore. And the difference between a link spam and like spammy links that you didn't direct to you is Google believes your site is also spammy. So like people get spam links all the time and they'll find like, you know, someone sent thousands of, you know, spam links to their sites. And that used to actually devalue sites. It was called negative SEO and you could do it with links. Most of the time now Google just devalues them and your site is unharmed. But during a spam update, if they find you have lots of spammy links, they're also evaluating other things about your site And so they have deemed you not worthy, and you will be removed or completely. They used to, we used to call it the 720. They would take you down 720 spaces or 960. But whatever, they don't do that anymore specifically, but you will be way down in the search results.
Well, indeed. And again, if yeah, if Google finds a gajillion and one spamming links on your page or into your website, they expect to find other egregious Google sins, whatever they might be.
Yeah. Otherwise, they would just remove the links and you wouldn't notice anything.
But again, the removal of all links, just blanket, you know what, we're just gonna get rid of your entire link profile. There's no way other than scrubbing it, starting from zero again. That, I don't know about that. That's,
I may have misread it. It may just be your spammy links. But
or it could just be Google saying something in advance of knowing what they're talking about.
Well, and also, I mean, if Google has decided that your spammy links are spammy, they may decide many of your other links that are questionable are also spammy. So, you know, unless you're getting your positive links from well-known, you know, good sites, you could lose all your links. But it does seem to say, I misread part of it, it does seem to say it's your spammy links, but that's what Google defines as spammy. And if you have so many spammy links that you're being given a spam penalty, and it's not penalty, sorry, it's a devaluation because it's an algorithm, algorithm devaluation, then you probably bought a lot of links and you probably don't have many regular links anyway. So you'll have to rebuild your link profile, but the right way. Or with a much better black hatter, one of the two.
Okay, so again, the June 2024 spam update is done, dusted, rolled out. If you haven't noticed anything, don't worry about it. You got nothing to notice. If you have noticed something, you've probably noticed it pretty big time.
Yeah, this isn't a small thing. So don't go, oh, I got 20% loss. I got hit by spam. No, you got hit by spam brain. You're like, I'm down 90 to 100%.
Okay, so A, this would have happened in the last week, and B, you know it. It happened, yeah. And there's no doubt about it. It happened.
Yeah. It looks like, right? Diving off a cliff, and then yeah, in a
okay.
Cliff
so
event.
if it's only sort of like a little bit of loss, then it's probably not the spam update. And if it happened before the last week, it's definitely not the spam update.
Yes, and if it happens after today, it is not the spam update, unless they roll out another one, which is doubtful.
There you go.
I mean, this fast.
Speaking of big change, and this actually isn't big change. This is more follow-up on big change that happened a year ago. But as of the end of this month, which is conveniently located just a few days from now, you will not have access to all that juicy and easily understandable Universal Analytics 3, formerly Google Analytics, data that you used to have but no longer have now that we're in a GA4 universe. It expires, gone, the great deletion.
Yes, so if you have not, and I suggest anybody who has multiple sites over the years to go check for your site, make sure there's not a site that's still sitting there that you forgot to do this with, but you have to store that data somewhere or it is gone. And there are, now you can do it with BigQuery, and apparently there's even a button in analytics that'll let you like store it with BigQuery, or you have to use another analytics program that'll pull it all in, and they have to pull it in by the first, because on the first it will be gone. And I'm assuming they mean 11:59 and 59 seconds on the 30th is your last day.
And by the way, assume they mean Greenwich. They probably mean Pacific, but don't take that as gospel. Assume they mean Greenwich. Go get it now.
Yeah, go get it now. You can use BigQuery. It's a few dollars a month. Or you can get another analytics program. There's some that aren't very expensive that will pull in all your UA data. But if you don't love G4 and you've been still using your historical data, which you don't get a lot of historical data with G4 because you're only allowed to port over so much. Let's say you have 10 years of data and you want to know, you know, what your sales were before the pandemic, which is a common thing that you want to compare because pandemic was so different. You want to go and export that data immediately. Just make it on your to-do list to do in the next 48 hours.
Okay. So
there's any time to port it over. So don't do it at like, you know, noon on 30th.
By the way, this isn't a big anvil being dropped on your heads, folks. You were warned about this 14 months ago.
Yeah, there's just a lot of small to medium-sized businesses that I don't think are super tuned into all this stuff because G4 is so complex. I know a lot of people don't even use it anymore, but they may still be using that historical data from UA. So get on it if you haven't. But you're right, it's not something new. If you've been logging into analytics, you've been seeing it. So
Yeah, indeed.
yeah.
So the thing is, now you've got to do something about it. It's like a domain name that you've owned forever, and you're spending $300 a year for it, or whatever, or the hosting plan that you've had forever that you don't even know what you're doing with, but it just rolls over and over. By the way, have you seen my credit card bill lately? It just rolls over and over and over again. I'm really bad at myself about this, but that's another thing altogether. Okay, so what the good Google taketh away, sometimes it giveth a little bit back. Just a little. So in GA4, there's a few new things that are gonna be very, really helpful. The one that I'm really, really liking is the new platforms it's gonna be measuring from, Pinterest and Instagram, other socials as well. You'll be able to put into GA4. It's gonna have AI generated insights for faster decision making. Hot and cold on that. And budgeting tools to help optimize marketing spend across channels. Again, I'm a little hot and cold on that, but probably very, very helpful for people who are just getting into using the tool.
Yeah, I don't think it's being super helpful for analysis. Most of this is just like, yeah,
You know, the truth
no
is,
helpful.
I'm not so sure how this might sound crazy, but I'm not really sure how much GA4 was meant to be used for analysis.
Well, it is meant to be used for analysis with their other tools you pay for, like
No,
BigQuery
it's I think it's meant to
and
be used
Looker.
to drive ad spend.
Oh, that too. Oh, definitely. Definitely. But they do want you to purchase, for, I know it's not that expensive, but still it's having to pay for something you used to get for free. A Looker or BigQuery will help you analyze the data. I know a lot of people, though, aren't even using, like, the clients who used to be like, here, look at our analytics, rarely ever mention it anymore because so few of them are, like, using it. They're using more, like, Search
Well,
Console and stuff than they are GA and BigQuery. I mean,
there's a lot of really, really useful information you get out of Search Console that should be in GA. I mean, the keywords you get out of Search Console are that you used to get them out of what was called Google Analytics, or what we now is you know as Universal Analytics.
And if you
That's the not
use,
said
right?
or not mentioned, but what now is just not there. You find that
Yeah,
in GS in Search Console.
if you Sipel and or Screaming Frog, you can put the API up and get 16 months worth of your keyword data. So, which is awesome, super helpful. And I want to mention this. This is not something I mentioned to you before, but I just want to mention this because it's rolling out this week and I just realized it. Daniel Foley, which we'll probably have on at some time, has developed a tool called SEO Stack, which turns your GSC into an analysis machine. And it's not very expensive. And I think the final rollout is like on the 20, well, it's supposed to be today. So I don't know if he rolled it out today or if he needed another week or so. But it's called SEO Stack. So check it out because I don't think there's any other tool out there that takes GSC and gives you this much information out of the GSC. But it turns it into almost like a smaller version of like a user Universal Analytics. Gives you all sorts of great information, and you can go back to the 16 months.
Excellent. Now,
No, not getting paid, no skin in the game. I've just been using it as a tester, and it's really amazing. Yeah.
excellent. I know I have not seen this, but I look forward to
Yes.
seeing it.
Yes, you'll get one. We'll do that after the show.
For people who are using Universe are using a GA4, they know there's really useful stuff in there. I love the differentiation between user and traffic acquisition. Loving the way that I can mix and match data points right on that platform. But it's Universal Analytics was made for analytics. GA4 is made for event counting and trying to understand why people do stuff, but honestly, it's made to push ad spend. That's what it just feels like.
It does, yeah, it very much feels like that. And it's just a lot of things that you see super useful in it just aren't in it, or they just started to add it or whatever. So a lot of people move to other analytics programs.
Okay. Before going any further, I want to give some love to our sponsor, Todd Igginski. We
Yes.
don't mention them often enough. I do believe Tom is back from Mount Everest, so there's a good chance he's listening. So it's really worth mentioning. It's really worth mentioning because we love them.
I feel like we should just have him on to talk about his experience at the base of Mount Everest. Like,
We should.
you really
We
should, because that's
absolutely
pretty
should.
amazing, right? So yeah, he didn't go all the way to the summit, but he was there for 1 or 2 weeks. He was gone, so.
Okay. Where do we go next? We got a bunch of googly stuff. We got a bunch of AI stuff.
I think we should go to the SCOTUS story. We got a little bit of little AI stuff, and then the rest Google, so we could get through that other stuff first. Because the SCOTUS
Okay.
one is pretty important decision.
Okay.
That was a decision that came out today.
So aside from Justice Barrett continually like dead naming Twitter and Facebook,
I love it.
not X or Meta, the Supreme Court has thrown out claims, has gotten rid of claims that the Biden administration forced social media companies to remove contentious content. Often stuff relating to the concept of theft of election.
And also COVID. A lot of this is around COVID.
And COVID information. And so the case alleged the White House was pushing around Meta and Twitter back in the days when they were called Facebook and or Meta and
I
X.
still call it Twitter and
Yeah,
Facebook.
back in the days when they were called Twitter and Facebook. Sorry, I can't. I just don't. I'm sorry, Elon. I just dead named your platform. Yeah, this was a stupid suit, an attack on nothing, really.
Yeah, there was an injunction made that the government could no longer talk to social media sites, so it also overturned that. And the contention was that because there were some emails surfaced in discovery that they asked them, did not demand, did not tell them they had to, if they could remove some disinformation about like COVID, which was harming people. And they did remove it, but they weren't told they had to. They weren't threatened with any sort of legal action or anything like that. So the court overturned the injunction that would have limited contacts between government officials and social media companies on a wide variety of issues. And the Supreme Court had put the injunction on hold while it waited to review it. So now they're free to discuss again. And it was found on a 6-3 vote, so it wasn't found on partisan lines. I think it's a win because there are things that the government needs to, ask sometimes. Like if there's disinformation hurting people about a deadly virus, hey, could you guys check into maybe removing this? I don't think that's a problem. Also, they have to talk to them about horrible things like, when, child images are put on, things like
No,
that.
there's the government has a role in regulating communication. It may or may not have a role in regulating protected speech, but it most certainly has a role in regulating the means of communication.
Exactly.
You know
Exactly.
what? You have to have fire lanes need to be kept open. This is like government having a role in regulating how traffic flows. It's just in times of emergency, you need to have communications channels. Ergo, there's a
Yeah.
role for government here.
And there's we have our constitution, and the government cannot restrict free speech, and they cannot do that. That had they been doing that, this would have been found the other way. But this is just generally, we talk to them and say sometimes when we have a concern, maybe there's a child, trying to find a word that's not horrible. We all
Missing?
know what I'm talking about. Not missing, child image
Oh,
networks.
being exploited.
Yeah, let's put it that way. Child being exploited, and they find that a ring of those images are showing up on social. That has happened on Facebook in the past. So they go to the company and they ask them if they could do better on moderating this. And by the way, we need your help. Right. So that's the kind of communications they're talking about, where there's, legitimate interest for the public and the government, as you said, being involved in a communication channel with the social media companies. So that was preserved today. Now they removed the injunction and they can now talk again. There is no evidence of coercion between the federal government and the social media sites.
Yeah. Okay. So OpenAI today, without any emotion whatsoever, announced that it was going to delay launching Voice Assist. It's not sure how to make a tool that is designed to elicit emotion and to react to emotion, to understand and respond with emotion. No, they're not quite sure how to make that safe for common use yet, according to a statement from OpenAI. ChatGPT's advanced voice mode can understand and respond with emotions and nonverbal cues, moving us closer to real-time natural conversations with AI.
If people don't remember, this is when they took Scarlett Johansson's voice, kind of, and you simulated it, and there was a whole lawsuit about that. This is that software. I read some critiques after we had that story. I think it was last month. Mm-hmm. And apparently, I don't know if they specifically used ChatGPT or they just used other systems, but these systems are very poor at actually reading expression because it changes based on gender, race, culture, ethnicity, nationality. So like the idea that people scowl when they're upset is actually only true in something like 30 to 40% of the cases. The fact that someone smiles because they're happy or content, also not always true. You can be smiling because you're smirking inside or something, right? So they're not very accurate at reading people's actual, when they've been tested in research groups, they're not very accurate in telling your actual tone. So mood and tone. And the idea is these are going to respond to you like you are doing this. Also, there's people who are neurodivergent who don't register at all in these programs. So they could cause a lot of harm. So I don't know. They don't specifically outline what their safety concerns are. But I have to think that after they said they were going to announce this and all this critique came out, that they might have been reassessing. Because if you're having a conversation with this thing that's reacting to your supposed emotion, and that's not really your emotion, I think that could cause problems. So that's just my opinion, but from what I read of the research.
I have great concerns for, how to say this, the viability of, not the viability, but the importance of human contact and how this is going to be used as a replacement for it. It's just not going to be good for people in the long run. I think it'll be a bandage for many emotionally lonely people in a very short term. But in the long term, I think it's going to end up damaging people more than it's going to end up helping people. I'm not even thinking about what this is going to do to help and service desks around the world. But I've already accepted that there's going to be great waves of unemployment coming very soon. I just haven't accepted that we're not ready to deal with it yet. Anyway.
Yeah. All of that.
I'm glad they're pulling back on emotionally respondent verbal AI. I think that's probably for the safety of all of us.
I agree. And I think that because there's a lot of people who are lonely now. That's a common issue in the United States, a well-known health public health issue. Mm-hmm. Giving them a fake something to talk to that may or may not read them properly, who could result in reinforcing maybe negative ideas, or, you know, it's just not, well, you and I talk, you know, we know each other and we assess how the other person's feeling. Maybe we say this, maybe we say that. That's not what these would do. They're just trying to read your face and the tone of your voice to respond. And well, I agree with you. I do think that's dangerous.
Moreover, I've been on the internet for I have no idea how many years now, and I can tell you straight up that that AI does not look like Scarlett Johansson, not a bit. Yeah.
But they would make an AI image that would look like her.
If you're in China, this won't be a problem for you because you've just been banned from OpenAI. Just done. In fact, you were never actually allowed to use OpenAI, but nobody was doing anything about it until now. Now you can't. You're probably not listening to Webcology either. So,
yeah, they've completely blocked China 100%. You cannot access it from China at all. So They kind of always had that policy, but they didn't clearly express it or clearly act on it, like with 100% assertiveness. But there was a big thing about AI models spreading disinformation last month. Also, he's working with the government now, so I imagine there's probably some pressures there to just not help China get ahead in the AI race or to let it use it for disinformation. So, which is a good thing, I think. I feel sad for the people of China, but.
Indeed. Although I'm sure that there are AI models made specifically for the largest digital market on
Oh
Earth.
yeah, 100%. Yeah, of course, definitely. Hi, China.
If only was it Roger Ma? Daniel Ma? Oh my goodness. Jack Ma was around to run them.
Oh yeah.
Speaking of OpenAI, and it's interesting to talk about Jack Ma. He was the head of Alibaba and a one-time head of Yahoo search in China.
Okay.
OpenAI bought a bauble called Rockset, and this bauble, a leading real-time analytics database providing world-class data indexing and querying capabilities, is thought to be the foundation for the search engine that everyone thinks OpenAI is completely disinterested in opening, or possibly interested in opening. So the acquisition of Rockset about a week ago may well be leading to the development of another AI-run search engine. This one run by OpenAI, ChatGPT 5.0.
Yeah, I know in our industry that was like the first analysis, but outside of our industry, it appears that the big get for OpenAI with Rockset is a vector-based product. I shouldn't say search, just necessarily search. So it can the vector base is what changed Google. You know, we went from a flat database model to the entity structure. So this is supposedly, one of the reasons, according to other publications like Engadget and Forbes, is that they would be using it to better improve the accuracy of the large language model and also the ability to be more versatile with it. So
Okay,
it
so
could
sort of like
be.
using the technologies that lets Google figure out why this is related to this, related to that.
Yes, exactly. So it would add a layer of that technology, but nobody actually knows what they're using for at this time. But it does seem like because Sam Altman has publicly been so against doing a search engine, it's very possible that they're using it for the capabilities. Just like when Google got, bought the basis for Google Earth, from a small company that was doing mapping. They didn't want to do what the company was doing. They wanted the capabilities and the tech. So it sounds like from the other side of the world, meaning other publications, that it does seem that it's strategically to enhance data processing, analytics, and retrieval capabilities, according to Forbes.
So I can't say what I want to say on the air. I mean, I can't. It would amount to a brazenly raised middle finger, perhaps both of them, because I'm kind of excited about this. Aimed at Microsoft AI CEO Mufasa Soliman, who has suggested in a post at X.com or Twixter that the social contract for content is that on the open web, content is freeware.
Yeah,
For training AI models.
he said that.
If you posted it, it's everybody's. Oh, for training AI models. And then it's everybody's once it's all garbled and disambiguated and stuff.
Yeah, he said that it was the social contract of the internet that when you put something up there, it was for free use for anybody. I think there's a lot of lawsuits. We went over the history of the internet that prove that that is not the case. Getty, for one, the most litigious, company in our industry. So I can't go to Getty and just take all their photos unless I want to pay $5,000 per photo when the lawyers catch up with me. So it's just completely wrong. And it's kind of troubling to hear the AI CEO. I didn't know they had like a special CEO for Microsoft AI, but they do. Say that, you know, it's just freeware. Like, I don't know. Like, no, there's no law that supports that. But just because you put it on the internet, it's free for them to use.
Well, and I'm not sure how the social contract has, if I remember correctly, the internet is a publishing medium, and the social contract on stuff that I write is it belongs to me or whomever I sold it to.
Yeah, whoever you're writing for.
Yeah, when I was working for Stepforth, I wrote something. Ross paid me to write it. Ross owned that piece of writing because that's how the world works. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, pretty much. So it's just an odd statement and a troubling statement because he comes from DeepMind and Google. I mean, he's not uninformed on how the internet works. So it feels like a little bit of gaslighting.
No, he's like, setting the rules. That's what he is I mean, literally rewriting the law by saying so.
Yeah, well, not the law itself. Like he can't affect that. That's stuff for the courts. But
I'm sorry, he's rewriting the contract by saying so. And have you ever had a big shark try doing this to you as a service provider? And didn't it piss you off when they did? It's happened to me. It's happened to everybody who's a freelancer. It has to have.
Yeah.
It's called scope creep, but this is the worst of it.
Yeah, this is like, I mean, it's such a ridiculous statement because he, as the head of AI and was the head of DeepMind, knows the laws. I think, unfortunately, with the large language models, there were conversation in boardrooms that went something like, I'm just like, you know, supposing, that went something like, hey guys, we need lots of training material. Where can we get it? We could crawl the internet, but what about copyright law? That'll be a gray area and we'll deal with that later. I think that's pretty much where it came from. So now all the large language model, because Sam Altman has expressed the same thing. So far, the courts have not agreed with him. There's no final findings, but the courts have thrown out those arguments in the U.S., the ones I've seen, where they say it's just free use, fair use, because it's not. That's not how fair use works.
Well,
just go to Getty and take all their images and then call us later and tell us how it went for you when you're not Microsoft, Google, or OpenAI.
Well, honestly, goodness, someone like Getty is the only one who could literally make it too expensive for OpenAI or Microsoft to go in and rip off all that information, because I mean, when they sue you big.
Yes, and they sue like little bitty companies where one person at the company was making an ad on Facebook and didn't realize they couldn't take the photo because maybe it wasn't on Getty's site, and then they get, I know, we know people who have got letters from Getty, and they're like, you use this one time on an ad, we found it, you owe us $5,000. I mean, it's crazy, right?
So, for every instance of the time, of every instance it was used. That's exactly the beauty of it.
Exactly. So it's just kind of, I don't know, I find it troubling that the head of a company with so much power right now thinks that he can just ignore the law and pretend it didn't exist and then try to convince everybody else that those laws don't exist for them.
I find it troubling that we live in a society where he probably can do exactly that.
Yeah, that's
and true. No one's going to stop him, because who can? What are you going to do about it? By the time it goes to the courts, it's already done.
Yeah, and that's their hope. I'm sure all these companies, these models, are trained on so much copyrighted material.
Okay, so this is from the Any Muppet Can Sing and Play Music file, okay? There's an article in Search Engine Land, and this is, you know, I appreciate the analysis, asking the question, can artificial intelligence perform a technical SEO analysis as effectively as a human can? So, predictably, the results were wrong, proving that SEO itself is far from predictable. You know, LLMs work by predicting what should come next in the sentence. Doesn't necessarily work that way. AI can summarize the general rules around issues found in a large-scale audit, but it'll never ever, and this is from the great Jill Whalen, it'll never understand the zen of SEO or how each site is as unique as the businesses that it represents. You can read out the results of a Sitebulb, Ahref, SEMrush, or whomever audit, but do you actually understand what those results mean in relation to that business or that website?
Yeah, the thing is that, and I'm seeing it right now in LinkedIn and Twitter. I won't say which people or which companies, but talking about how they're doing all this analysis with the large language model. Large language models don't do analysis. They can't analyze things, except possibly if it's like the language itself, because that's what they're based on. But when they're like, I analyzed something, it's like, no, it just gave you back the most likely result. And maybe you got lucky and it got it right. And often it gets it way, way wrong. And in this case, it looks like a lot of the answers were generic. So, you know, they're like talking about canonicals. This is how, you know, this is how you should do canonicals in a very generic way. And I have known when I see these articles that come out and go analyze with, you know, ChatGPT, or I wrote this analysis. I know they're wrong, but I've never gotten in, had the time to do a comparison. And I like what the comparison here is. This was done by James Allen on Search Engine Land, where he actually used other like Ahrefs and other programs to show the difference. Like, hey, this is why we know it's wrong because the other program showed it this way. So I think that was a good comparison. And I kind of like that it just confirmed what I already knew. So I don't have to even go down that path, which is it doesn't work. So it's not that there aren't functions like Screaming Frog with ChatGPT. It can't be helpful, like summarizing things or helping you to write the audit or something like that with the generic descriptions. But the real analysis has to be done by you.
No, indeed. I mean, I liked what Martin McDonald was doing. And this is over a year ago, where he was he'd modified Sitebulb, and really he just used AI to create a Jira ticket. And he did it in
Yeah.
Jira because that's the most used workplace or work tracking platform used by developers. He could have written it for other work track platforms as well. That's a good use of AI because, you know, when we're doing a large scale audit, there's a crap ton of outcomes to go through, but you got to write the analysis yourself. You can't have AI do that.
Yeah, I
AI
think
isn't going
it's
to understand every individual use case.
exactly. Like I have a weird site right now where WooCommerce wrote these weird parameters and then Google can add to the cart. So there's like when I did the crawl, there was a cart with $321,000 worth of $40 products in the cart. You know, it's
It
yeah.
was a very good day in Salesville,
Yeah,
wasn't it?
exactly. And there's another one with $220,000, another with $300,000. You're never going to find that this way. But also on this, what Martin did is pretty brilliant. But Martin's also pretty brilliant. I mean, he's also a coder. You know, he was in the past affiliate marketer. He's been the head SEO for multiple major brands. So I have his output for one of my sites. We did a test on one, and it's very good. And it writes a nice Jira ticket. And it explains it based on things that Sitebulb has already published about everything that it finds, because that's what Sitebulb does. And if you never use Sitebulb, the beauty of it, if you're new to all this, is you can click on anything that they tell you is wrong, and they give you a detailed explanation of how they found it, why they found it, why it tripped it, and here's how you fix it. So he just summarized all that information, put in the Jira ticket.
But
And so,
even so, that's not the analysis. That's
no.
just the, you know, common, that's just the knowledge base around the issue.
Yeah, exactly, because it can produce something and say this needs to be fixed, and it's like 2 pages on a million page site, and you're like, well, I don't need to spend the time on that, right? But also, what I find from Sitebulb and Screaming Frog is I will find anomalies. I did a talk on this at Brighton SEO in San Diego last year. The anomalies lead me down these paths of these true issues with the site that no tool finds. It just leads me there. And if I was relying on ChatGPT to write up all the answers here. One, we know they'd be wrong based on this test. This test seems to be pretty well done. Or they'd be too generic. But two, they wouldn't allow me that ability to go down the deep path, which sometimes is a pain because it can take an extra week to finish the audit because I found something really weird, like in this case. But yeah, these tools won't help you. I would stick with something like Sitebulb and Screaming Frog. Sitebulb gives you a lot of great analysis charts, things like that, where you can just screenshot that and put it into your audit. But I wouldn't trust these tools.
Well, no, even with using OpenAI, you still have to have a crawler, a crawl-based auditing tool, do the crawl of the site
Yeah,
for you.
that's
So
true.
you're still using Ahrefs, you're still using Screaming Frog, you're still using SEMrush or Sitebulb or whatever your crawler is. You're just, you know, letting OpenAI do the heavy lifting for your brain.
Yes, exactly.
And often, as we know, either it picks up the wrong blocks or just drops them all together. Okay. It's not nice to beat on a robot that can't defend itself. Where do we want to go? Do we want to go to 230, having little teeny holes in it, or do we want to go to Liz Tucker, Elizabeth
Let's get
Tucker?
Liz Tucker. I thought that was an interesting interview.
Okay, so if you haven't heard it already, was it released earlier today, or was it yesterday?
I'm not sure. It was yesterday or today, though, and so most people probably haven't heard it yet.
And what is probably the most recent off the record podcast? Google Search Director of Product Management Elizabeth Tucker talked about how Google measures search quality, the how they gauge factors like relevance, accuracy, trustworthy, freshness. She talks about I know how they go from using search quality raters, assessing real world results, to getting feedback from engineers and product managers. And really, just how to blend big data and human insight. That was an interesting interview. I'm not sure. I mean, it's all about revealing methods of measuring search quality. I don't think I learned much new from it that I didn't already know, that
No,
they haven't already said.
it's not a big reveal on like insights into search, right? Like the actual ranking factors. It's more like how does search work? Like how do they determine things? How do they determine relevance and quality? Like, you know, we have UIX groups, you know, people who test the interface on Google and see how it's working and how search is working and how they do qualitative and quantitative data. I thought it was very interesting, I think, in the sense that understanding how Google works internally. And I think that it's important that people understand that because they'd be less likely to fall for, you know, bad information because they'd understand, oh, Google just doesn't work that way. That's not how that would happen. So I think it's really good. I thought she had a really cute story on where EAT came from. So I know you didn't hear this part, so this you'll be hearing it for the first time. It was at the very end, but EAT was not an internal Google decision. When they were having quality raters rate, you know, results. For tests that they do. A lot of times the quality raters were putting in, you know, it needs more expertise, it's not very authoritative, things like that, right? So they were putting it in so much, they developed their own little acronym and they just put EAT in there for when they're rating things.
So EAT
So,
isn't something that Google told the raters to look out for. It's
no.
something the raters told Google were not seeing this.
No, it was more like they were trying to summarize concepts that Google told them to look for. But it wasn't summarized in the Raiders guide. So they're like, okay, I've looked at all this and this is just under expertise, right? We need to write a whole bunch of stuff about this. This is the same thing on the other 10 sites. So the EAT came from the quality raters, and people need to remember most quality raters are not internal to Google. They're external companies, right? So they were seeing this in the quality rater stuff. So they added it to the quality raters guide so that they would have that thought in their mind when they were evaluating things. So as she confirmed again today, it's not in the ranking signals. It's not about ranking signals. It's basically that the quality raters said, hey, when we look at stuff, this is kind of how we look at it. And they were doing it so often, they made their own acronym. And then Google said, oh, let's just put that acronym in the quality raters guide. And she was actually, Elizabeth Tucker is one of the first people to work on the initial quality raters guide. And she talks about that. So it's kind of interesting to hear how all that developed. But I thought that was kind of cool. Like, it's not an internal Google thing. It literally was from the quality raters.
Like most people out there, I'm a total sucker for confirmation bias. And this sort of falls in with what I've been saying all along. EEAT is a philosophy. It's the
Yes,
way you look at
exactly.
information.
Yeah, it's a concept. It's a generalized concept. And there are SEOs who use it that way. Like, we're not looking for ranking signals here. We're just like, hey, these are generalized concepts. We want to make sure these are involved. So this is like, you don't need to put author is this well-known person because we want expertise. They're saying, hey, we just want to make sure that there's expertise displayed on this page, usually through language. There's a pattern for how they analyze it with entities compared to other documents in that topical vector. Also, she talked about using relevance matching and topics, and that's neural matching. She didn't say neural matching, but she's talking about neural matching. So that was kind of interesting on how they've been focusing on topical relevancy. The negative was they act as though they're completely unaware of all the issues, like saying search is doing really well And we know search is not doing well. And that's not just coming from us. That's academics and, you know, news organizations and talking about it for the last 6 to 8 months. So there wasn't any acknowledgement of the issues, but it was a very interesting interview.
One of the things I found interesting was actually near the beginning of the of her interview, where she talked about how the way users ask questions of Google has changed over the years. Apparently, years ago, when Elizabeth Tucker started working there, so this would be like 14 years ago, Google users were entering 2 to 3 word queries. A 4 word query was considered a long search query. Nowadays, people are writing full sentences, writing full questions, and looking to get answers out of Google and other search engines. I think that speaks to a comfort level with the use of the search engine that wasn't there before, more than I think it speaks to quality of search.
Oh, yeah. I think it just is a change in search. Because before, we know from the, you know, from the government documents, right, the DOJ docs, that in before 2018, which is when they started adding BERT and natural language understanding, that they didn't understand the language on the page. And remember, we talked about this before, title tags were so important. Like, every word in the title tag mattered because that's one of the few things they can analyze, right? And then the H1, and then the context of the text and the semantics, they really couldn't. And now they can, and they've been doing that and adding to it since 2018. So I think users have just developed over time, realizing that they can put in a sentence and Google will retrieve things that matter. Where before, when you put in a sentence, it may or may not because all the stop words and they weren't using. Sure. So, yeah.
It's funny, writing long queries feels more natural to me now. And there's no way I would have done that before, but now it actually feels very natural to me.
Yeah, same here. But I kind of miss the days when I could just put in the words and I knew it would bring up a relevant result. I don't know that Google's been doing such a great job on matching my sentence long queries.
The important thing for me, Pizza North York still works. So okay, here's one. SEOs rejoice. The never ending scroll is over. Google is back to pagination.
Yeah.
You have 10 blue results somewhere on the page down there, somewhere or another. I swear to God, there's 10 blue results underneath the AI overview. If there really is, go look for them. Please do. And if you do have 10 blue results, you're going to have 10 blue results and then a series of numbers from 1 to whatever, or 2 to whatever. There's actually stuff under there. You can even go looking for it just to prove it. So second page, third page, fourth page, they're back again. And there is actually content on it. You just don't want to be it.
Yes, and the joke is back. Where do you bury a dead body? On page 2.
Yep, so you can do that again. You can now kill with impunity and bury the bodies. Yep.
So I actually wrote an article in 2015 about why infinite scrolling might not be right for your site, because that back then everyone was adding it. Mm-hmm. And basically, I don't think it's changed much, because Google's reasons for getting rid of continuous scroll are the same reasons back then it was not indicated for most sites. And basically, it's really simple. There's two user intents. There's a directed user intent, and then there's like, I don't care, I'm just going to doom scroll. And doom scrolling doesn't work when you're trying to find something. It frustrates users. They have like a page map in their head. Like, you couldn't go anymore back and say, oh, I saw that on page 2 in Google search, right? Then you'd have to figure out where in the scroll it was and all these other things. And it's a more, it makes the pages load slower because you have to load in all that data. And then also it makes for a poor user experience because they don't want to have to scroll through everything. It also breaks the back button and there's all sorts of things. Anyways, those seem to be still true. And that's basically what they were saying when Google said they undid this, was that it was costing too much. It wasn't helping with user satisfaction or with Google or search. And it was costing too much on the page load time.
Okay, so going back to 10 blue links per page will make SEOs happy. This should also make SEOs happy, but I'm kind of feeling the mixed vibes about this. But Google's experimenting with a search result layout that places AI overview link cards above the AI overview rather than below or in the middle of it. Now Google is getting better at matching up content with the content used in the generative overview with pages it's mentioning in its and it's link cards, though that's not 100% accurate or 100% right. At least it's making the links, a few of them as it may be, visible above the AI overview. So that's what I got to say about that. It's not, I'm not convinced this is a great improvement for, but it does place clickable links above the block of text.
It's a test. Apparently, they're not necessarily rolling this out. You know what? I'm just put back the featured snippet. Seriously, like these are not positive. Like I was literally looking for something simple yesterday or day before. And I was looking at the time of the debate, and it used to be that would just show up, and not just a feature, it would just be an information box.
And well, that's all you there. Need, isn't it? 8 p.m., blah, 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 whatever time the debate's at.
It's not there anymore. It's not there. They don't show those anymore because they show these AI overviews, and there was no AI overview either. Well, not that I ever click on them because I hate trying to discern whether it's telling me the truth or not. But it's like, just put back the feature snippet or the information box. Really, this is not working, Google. Like, it just isn't. And also, the other thing that they do with these, I don't know if you've noticed, but the AI overview will also give you, like, multiple points of view. So Chris Long from Gophers Digital put in, like, something about AI overviews and how quality they are. And Google's AI overview is like, they're not quality. And then there was a post below it from Google saying they are quality. And in the AI overview, often it'll say they aren't quality. Well, maybe they are, and then maybe they aren't. And I'm like, I don't need two points of view.
That comes from the little-known Elmer Fudd algorithm, the Wabbit season, Duck season algorithm. Yeah,
I like that. Let's just call all algorithm updates from now on Elmer Fudd updates. I like.
Well,
that.
Just this one in particular that completely contradicts itself: Wabbit season, Duck season.
Yes, I think what they're trying to do is, so they don't get it wrong, they put in one version of everything, but then it's like, it's completely useless because I need an answer, not a, here are three things it could be. Go search yourself. That's what I was doing. Get rid of this box.
By the way, I don't know what big media, didn't we already learn that you can't, anyway, I'm not going there.
And by the way, in the image that we have from Search Engine Roundtable from Barry, of this, you can see where they directly copied the content from and put it in the AI box, because one of the boxes says crawled, currently not indexed. And then the AI says, there are a few things you can try to fix the crawled, currently not indexed status, in quotes, just like it was in the title of the other page. So they directly copy things, which is unlike most large language models.
Well, again, if you are going to directly copy a sentence from one of my websites, please do. But absolutely credit it 100% back to where it came from. Because that's why we wrote it. That's exactly why we wrote it.
Exactly.
Okay, so Google is apparently showing more health-related AI overviews in your money or your life categories, where they were supposedly pulling back. This is anecdotal evidence, but it's anecdotal evidence coming from Adam Reimer, who is usually right about stuff he sees.
Yeah.
He posted on Twixter over the weekend, AI overviews are answering medical and your money or your life queries again. He wasn't seeing them for a while. Now back on a lot of queries. Are the results solid? Sorry?
Sorry. Doesn't that seem like the silliest place to put something that's often inaccurate? I don't know.
Well, here's the thing. If it's giving people solid advice, then I think it's wonderful. And especially if I'm having a heart attack, I do not want to choose between 10 blue links to decide the best course of information. I want something authoritative right now. I could see it working well there, but I don't want to be told to eat rocks if I'm having a heart attack.
You know, that one thing I do not really personally comprehend or can't wrap my brain around is the amount of money that goes into doing these when the old method was actually better. The knowledge panel for medical was better. The featured snippets, 9 times out of 10, better. And so I don't really understand trying to force this technology that has so many issues and is so expensive, and you have to, they're running out of data to train on in the next 2 years. Like, it just, they're prettier, I guess. And they give a summary, so you keep people on the page so they click your ads, I'm supposing. But I don't know. It feels like a lot of effort for something that's not functioning.
Do you know how people are really, really into TikTok? These quick
Yes.
hits of endorphin, these quick endorphin hits. A TikTok video costs almost zero to make. I mean, you got to buy yourself a good mobile device and you have to have an internet account and you have to be able to post the video, edit the video. So you might have to buy editing software, though a lot of that's free these days. Now, a good half hour of television costs hundreds of thousands, if not millions, to produce and distribute. Yet people, more people are watching the TikTok video than watching the a really expensive and slickly distributed professional production. I feel the same way about generative overviews and as I do about algorithmically created search results. People are looking for the quick fix. They're not looking for the quality. They don't want it. They think they want the quality, but their actions literally and consistently prove otherwise.
That the difference is the AI overview costs what the show makes costs to make, and the featured snippet is the TikTok cost.
Well, yeah, but if you're drawing more eyeballs, you find a way to magically surround the stuff with ads, or more importantly, become the lifestyle producer du jour, you're gonna make a lot of money. A lot of money, even if you've invested a lot. I mean, look at what Google was trying to do. What it announced in May at that at Google I/O. That was about creating a lifestyle machine. It would run your life for you. The profit opportunities there are too absurd and obscene to even go into, but they're manifest. And that's the goal. So they'll spend billions because
Well,
they
after
do
that is what the
expect to
stuff
reap the
costs to
world
run.
from it.
Yeah, Sam Altman came out today and said AI will result in $100 trillion GDP for the
Yeah,
world.
and he's probably right. Yeah, sure.
No.
But it depends, and honestly, it depends what if you can value quantity over quality. But yes, he's probably right. It will add trillions to gross domestic
No, he said
product.
100 trillion.
Okay.
Yeah, I doubt it. But anyway, but so
Where next? We are probably down to our last 10 minutes or so. So where are we going next?
we have our fast stories for the end, and we're almost ready, we're done with our big ones. So do you want to talk about, let's see, I don't know, do we really need to talk about our ranking systems aren't perfect? Like,
No, and
yeah,
honestly,
how many
for what
times?
it's worth, Danny Sullivan's admitted that Google's working really hard on the ranking system.
And
Moving right along.
working really hard on fixing whatever they broke. Apparently, they're almost to admitting they broke something. Like, almost got there today. So this week, we'll see if they admit it next week.
Branded keywords will not hurt your ranking if you're writing a review or you're writing about your product. Don't worry about using your brand name in the review or the write-up because that's kind of what you're expected to do. You're writing about the product
Yeah.
after all.
Yeah, I saw the
I don't understand this one.
conversation. I do because I know who wrote Danny, so I won't say the name or anything, but they tend to have a kind of theories that are a bit off the beaten path. And
Okay.
this was one of their theories. And
Why would you not like?
I you know, there are people that
Why?
do a lot in our industry, there are a lot of people do correlation thinking it's causation and it's not. So somebody else had written about how they check these sites and they mentioned brand names and they can't compete with the main brand competitors, so they're not showing up, except that Google makes special places for these reviews. So that would like they do with local. So that wouldn't be a thing. But I could see why if you are looking at the elephant from only one angle, that you might have seen it that way. But yeah, put the brand names in your reviews because
When you're
that is
writing
why they're
stuff for
there.
people, write stuff for people so they understand what you're
Yeah.
writing. You
It's
don't
really
monkey around with
amazing.
this.
It's amazing. I loved it. It was great. It was the best thing I ever had. What are you writing about? I don't know. I was told not to put the name in here. Like, that makes no sense. So yeah, put the name in there.
Okay, a new venue. Google Perspectives is now showing Instagram posts. It's a new feature in Google Search. Started about a week or so. So there may be a new way to you know, move ideas, products, social, more hits, more social hits in search. And I dare say this speaks to content diversity, which is not a ranking signal in any way or a factor. But if you, you know, move your ideas in a whole bunch of different venues, you might find yourself showing up more often in search results.
I will tell you, I did a Reddit post the other day about NavBoost, and it showed up within 5 hours in the top 10. Not as part of the little section either, like its own post.
What was it in your mind? Was it a particularly helpful post that clarified something?
Oh, it was, but it's just so fast and in 5 hours. But that's because they made special placements for them. The only thing issue I have with doing things like this Instagram is if you've been doing Instagram all these years and you put a lot of private stuff, not private, but, you know, publicly can be seen on Instagram, but not expecting it to show at the top of the search results. I just find that it's something Google should allow you to opt out of, but not have to block all your posts for the people that might see it on Instagram. You know what I'm saying?
I hear you. That's a tough one. I really hear you. Perhaps there's go words that create the conditions for the Instagram post to show up in perspectives. I don't know anything about that, but
you could just
I do
like
hope
do
that somebody can't type in the name of their crush and get bikini pics. That would not be cool.
Yeah, and you know, that's the thing is they just start like what they did with Twitter. I hate that my Twitter show up with my name at the top, but I have no way to control that unless I just shut down Twitter. So it's like I think they should allow, like they do in WordPress, that you could just post not to be available to search results. And then, or like Facebook does, and then they can be shown to people on all the people on Instagram, but it won't be shown in a search result.
I mean, that's tough. You could, if there was a no follow, no index, you could put onto an individual post maybe, but otherwise, I mean, you know how Google works. It has to be domain specific.
Well,
it tends to go that way.
Facebook has that though. Facebook has a setting where you can say, I don't want to be in search results, but you're still public. So anybody can see you, but it doesn't show up in the search results. So
yeah, but that's for your whole profile, though, right? For everything.
Yeah, it's
not just individual posts.
But if you could do it on a page level, it'd be pretty simple, right? They just put a little thing, no search result, whatever.
Indeed.
And then it puts a no index.
Indeed. Yeah, but and it puts a no index on your on that particular thing. That would work, sure.
Yeah, it would be nice. It'd be nice to have control over your social media showing up like that. So.
But. Let's just say you happen to be pushing product and you're not getting as many clicks as you were getting, like, say, I don't know, 8 months ago. You might pick up a couple this way.
Yes, this is true. You can use it for that. Like with the Reddit post I did on NavBoost showed up and not for obscure terms.
Oh, but here's
either.
The thing. You were pushing information. You were pushing something that was helpful and explanatory. You weren't pushing product. See, if you're pushing product through Reddit, your chances are diminished. You're not going to have
that's
that.
True.
You're probably not going to have the experience Christine just had because she was pushing a good, you know, good, solid, helpful information.
Yeah, exactly. And also the Reddit people won't let you get away with it either. So.
Well, then there's that.
Yeah.
Although, you know, it does take the Redditors like at least 50 minutes to catch up with you. and you could tell Brent I said that. Okay, where's the next?
Let's see, what else is
this
important?
This was a weird one. I couldn't replicate this, but some fellow sent Barry Schwartz a GIF. Shaheem Akitrathan, I'm sorry if I got your name wrong, Shaheem, sent a GIF to Barry Schwartz of what looked like Google sliding an overlay. So say you're doing a query and you get results and then you expand your query. In Shaheem's GIF, it showed Google, he did the original search and he expanded on the search, and Google didn't just change screens. It slid a screen over top of the old one.
Let's hope that is not a thing. It's just a bug, I hope, because that would break everything. Like
I've done dozens of different searches trying to use different like a commercial search and information search, search on sports teams, so like deep solid information, financial search, medical search, and I've not been able to replicate this.
Yeah, so. It's just very odd. So let's just pretend it's not going to exist because it's very odd and it would be very annoying. And I can't use the back button to like go back to your previous search. Awful.
Now, for what it's worth, you do have a little drop down, at least in Chrome. There's a drop down on the top left of your screen that will show you past search history. If
yes,
you're into
true.
Looking at it.
It's on the right one.
So I could see that as a useful feature if I wanted to go back and remember why I went down this rabbit hole in the first place. But I can already do that with that down arrow.
And by the way, on my Chrome, it's on the right hand side, but it's just this little down arrow. It's awesome because it's playing anything that's making a sound. It will show it at the very top, so you can shut it off. Because sometimes finding, you know, I have like 5 windows open with 100, you know, tabs piece. I might do that. It can be hard to find the thing that's playing. So that's really nice.
Okay, you know what? I think we've gone down the list fairly accurately. I'm not sure there's a lot of stories that we missed that we actually needed to cover. So I'm pleased about that. Really quickly, there is a WordPress virus out there. We talked about viruses last week. Here's a neat thing. Virus writers have discovered this one neat trick that WordPress users hate. Instead of forcing their way into your database, they're forcing their way into your plugins, and they're hacking the plugin at the root level, at the plugin level itself. So you're installing something that's infected.
Yeah, it happens when somebody has a commit process allowed for third parties.
So WordFence has noted that there are 5 unique plugins out there that are vulnerable. Social Warfare, Blaze Widget, WrapperLink Element, Contact Form 7, which a gajillion people use. This is Contact Form 7 multi-step add-on. A zillion people use Contact Form 7, and Simply Show Hooks. If you're using WordFence, and you should be using WordFence if you're using WordPress, check it out. It'll give you details of the affected plugins, and there's no guarantee that if you patch, you will be fine, but you will probably be fine because the plugins themselves are aware of the issue. I think this was a neat attack, though.
Well, I definitely appreciate that they found it and they've alerted everybody, because this could have caused a lot of damage if somebody didn't know that it's possible, because if it's possible on one, it's going to be possible on hundreds.
Yeah, so, and again, it's the one that really freaked me out was Contact Form 7. Almost every website, a WordPress website I've ever worked on, has used Contact Form 7. It's just one of those. It's just such a useful little plugin, right?
Yeah, they do use that a lot. Yeah, so this is very, very helpful. Keep an eye out, open. Keep your eye open for it. Keep your eye open for notifications and update your plugins as soon as you get an update.
Yeah.
So, we have one more story we should cover before we go. Just real
quick. What
was that? Google Chrome. How long have I been in this industry? Google Chrome for mobile adds local Chrome action search shortcuts and trends. So you can engage with local businesses, like it has call button directions and reviews right in the search dropdown. It has shortcut suggestions, which will give you things like bus schedules, things like that.
And really? Trending, I have not. When did this happen? I haven't seen this yet.
They're just rolling it out now. It's like brand new. Trending suggestions. So when you type in, it's going to give you the trending searches in the dropdown. So these are all in the dropdown suggest area. So they're not like, you know, special functions once you've done a search are actually in your dropdown. So like one of the examples I give for the shortcut suggestions is like city metro bus schedules can be in your shortcut suggestions. So anyway, take a look at it. It's got a lot more detail. It's on Search Engine Roundtable by Barry Schwartz. It was published today and it's about Google Chrome editions. I think for people that I don't use Chrome on my Android. I use the Samsung browser, but this could be super helpful for people that do.
I'm a suburban old man. I just want the fastest way to Costco.
My dad calls me there every time he goes for a Costco walk.
Well, you don't go to Costco for the walk. You go for the cookies, clearly, and the hot
he
dogs.
He says he goes for the walk, but I'm going to guess.
But he's really there for the cookies.
There's some cookies, yes, judging by his pantry.
Okay. On that, we've got full clock. So on behalf of Christine Jackacher from Sites Without Walls, this is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media. We want to throw some love out to our sponsored audience, Key. We also want to say thanks to George and to Ricky in the studio and Darren and Brandy in the office at WMR.FM. Friends, be cool, be kind, be good with each other, rank well, and we'll talk to you next week.
Bye, everybody.